and welcome to our podcast, Within the Mist, a hidden place where we walk into the dark and clouded unknown. I am your red-eyed in the dark host, Gary, here to entertain and inform you about the likes of cryptids, ghosts, and other mysteries. Joining me is my lovely wife and co-host, Goldie Ann. Hello, Goldie Ann.
Hello, Gary.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. In fact, usually there's not much for me to add to our bantering section before the show, but this time there's just so much. So please bear with me as I have a great deal of it to go through, and it's pretty exciting news.
Awesome.
First off, this is our 50th episode.
Woo!
Yeah, this is quite an achievement since we started out just doing this as a hobby because of being locked in of COVID-19. So within those 50 episodes, we've increased our listener audience to have over 1,000 downloads each week of our episodes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's quite a growth from, I think, our first podcast. We had like 7.
Do we want to talk about that?
Well, we can talk about it now that it's grown.
Okay.
We don't talk about Bruno back then, but we can talk about Bruno now.
That's right. Bruno's the good guy.
Exactly.
Spoiler alert.
Well, because of our support, we are also gaining sponsorships, and the show is actually being paid for. Now, you may notice that while you're listening to the podcast, in the middle, there will be a commercial spot. And I know that it's being added to the show, but we do have control of being what's being placed there. So I promise to keep it worthwhile and somewhat thematic with our show and our creepy nature. We are also getting recognition from podcast providers as we increase in rankings, and we hope to gain a nomination in the Paranormality Magazine's Podcast of the Year.
That would be awesome.
In fact, I just posted today about how we are ranked number 2 for the month.
Wait, you posted today or you posted last week?
Well, I posted today, which will be a day before this podcast airs.
Oh, right.
Time means nothing in the world of podcasts. Also, I have been transferring a lot of the TikTok videos over to YouTube. There's over like 230 TikTok videos at the moment, so it's going at about 10 a day, so it might take me a month to get them all over there. But if you go to the Within the Mist YouTube channel, that's another location where you can search through and find your favorite cryptids, ghosts, or other mysteries, and you can watch a quick little 2 to 3 minute videos. As soon as I get caught up on the TikToks, then I'm going to start doing video versions of our podcast. Since we're not currently filming videos of those, it's probably going to be still images or video clips to help support or visualize the story we're talking about.
That actually sounds pretty cool.
I think it'll look good, and once I get the format down for that, it'll go a lot faster, and then we can start doing some actual video conferencing, especially the interviews.
Ew, my face on TV?
Your face is in my dreams, so why can't it be?
Oh, God. Okay.
Don't think you're getting out of it that easy, babe. And for our humor of the week, I have a short little story for you. It seems there was a small town guy who went into his pharmacy and asked the man at the counter, "What do you have to get rid of these darn moths?" Well, the pharmacist looked at him and sold him a pack of mothballs. A day later, the same man came back into the pharmacy and asked for 50 packs of mothballs. The pharmacist was confused and asked, "Why do you need so many?" The man replied, "Your mothballs are great, but them darn moths are so hard to hit."
Oh, my God. Oh, boy.
So just a little story to get us started.
Yeah.
Today's episode contains stories about a monstrous creature that does attack people and may or may not have been involved in the collapsing of the Silver Bridge that cost people their lives. This may be disturbing to some of our listeners. We are storytellers who have gathered together our information on some of our favorite mysteries to bring to you. We don't attempt to scare our listeners on purpose. Well, maybe just a little. Listener discretion is always advised.
Okay, so you mean to tell me after all this time, we are now going to do our mascot.
I was saving the Mothman for episode 50. In fact, in addition to the story of the Mothman, it's just so large and interesting, I couldn't limit it to one episode.
Ah.
Therefore, because this is episode 50, I've divided it into multiple episodes, with this being the first one. And it'll cover the Mothman as a creature. Now, there will be two other episodes following this, and they will describe the connection of UFOs to the legend of the Mothman, as well as the supernatural and paranormal aspects of the Mothman legacy.
He is definitely one of the more well-known and talked-about creatures.
Very much so. And there was just so much going on in just 1 year in this small little town. So it's going to be a lot to put into a single episode. So you may find that some of the stories you've heard that are connected to the Mothman might be excluded from this episode. Just bear with me, because I may have included those and more in the other two episodes.
Awesome.
Mothman is just like having three stories all running at the same time. And they interweave in some parts here and other parts there. I just felt I could do a better job telling the stories if I broke them up into the different categories.
Well, awesome. Let's get started.
Well, if you're ready, let's take a walk within the mist. It is a cold November 11th, 1966. It is late afternoon in a wooded cemetery in Reamer, West Virginia. It could almost be the setting of a horror movie, with how quiet the air is as the dry leaves fall from the branches to leave the trees empty and almost dead-like. Kenneth Duncan is working on the solemn task of digging a grave for his father-in-law in the cemetery. He is not alone, as Andrew Godby, Bill Poole, Emil Gibson, and Robert Lovejoy were working with him on this grim task. The work had to be done by hand and took the group of men until just before evening when they neared the end of their task. It was at that moment that they realized that they were not alone. The five men heard a noise and they turned to the trees. There, they saw something within the barren branches at one end of the cemetery. It was described as a winged brown human, which launched itself from the high trees, perched to swoop over the gravediggers before crossing to the other end and vanishing into the dusk. Each man was left in a state of shock and unsure of what they had just experienced. Little would these men know that they were involved in one of the first teasings of what would become known as the Mothman.
Dun, dun, dun.
I know, the five gravediggers, I mean, that is just too perfect for an entry to a horror movie. So it's very fitting that this is kind of the first story that involves the Mothman.
Well, yeah, two things were going through my mind. One, they had to dig their own graves, and two, it took five?
Well, more hands make the work go faster? I don't know. And this was the father-in-law of one of the men, so maybe they were having an informal wake for the deceased. And it's kind of hard to say, as not much information has gone on.
True.
What we do have more information about is Chapter 1, the TNT area. There would be many sparks that would be connected to the first appearance of the Mothman. However, it would be the events at 11:30 p.m. on November 15th, 1966, that would shine the spotlight on the creature and on the small town of Point Pleasant, West Virginia. The 1960s was a time of fast cars and parties. This was especially true to the youth of Point Pleasant. There was not much else for excitement so many times. The weekends was a time for parties out in what was called the TNT area. The TNT area is located roughly 5 miles north of Point Pleasant. It is a woodlands and pretty much abandoned area. It gained its name due to the scores of concrete igloos that are scattered throughout the woods. At one time, these bunkers were the storage locations for explosives. Explosives that were manufactured within the West Virginia Ordnance Works during the Second World War. Residents of the time were bussed out to these locations to perform tasks involved in the manufacturing and shipping of war explosives. Much of these explosives and chemicals were stored in concrete storage sheds built throughout the TNT wooded area. After World War II ended, the government no longer utilized the area for the making of bombs, so they decided to rent out the igloos to various industrial companies. These companies needed locations to store their dangerous chemicals and even toxic waste. This storage was not without accidents, and it resulted in a shocking amount of pollution. This seeped into the wetlands, ponds, and the hardwood forests that surrounded the area. The extent of this environmental pollution had only been discovered after the property was designated as a wildlife protection area. Despite the toxic waste and radiation contamination that could be poisoning the area, teenagers and young adults still found the abandoned buildings perfect for gathering for drinking and racing. There is even a stretch of road from the TNT area towards the town of Point Pleasant. It was straight, empty, and perfect for people to show off their cars, and that is exactly what two young couples had on their minds on this evening. Chapter 2, Drag Racing the Mothman. Trust me, you'll see why. Now, it was on this evening that two married couples, Roger and Linda Scarberry, and Steve and Mary Millette, were out on the night of November 15, 1966. Roger was hoping to show off his cherished 1957 Chevy Bel Air Classic, his souped-up automobile that he hoped to race. They decided to all travel together to the popular teen hangout for alcohol and cruising. The four were hoping to run into some of their local friends having a party within the woods, but they found the area barren upon their arrival. Roger was not quite ready to give up yet, so he turned his car off of the main road and towards the unlocked gate that led into the TNT area. They crept into the grounds in the car, looking for any signs of the other teenagers. Ahead of them was the generator building, long since abandoned, powering the ammunition construction site. Everything was dark, except for the very limited light cast out from the light of Everything was dark, except for the very limited light cast out from Roger's Chevy, and that light did nothing beyond the dirt road ahead of them. Linda peered out of her window to the building, and there she saw something. Taking a moment to focus again, she realized she could see a pair of red eyes peering back at her from the shadows. Their light seemed to not reflect light, but to project their own inner embers. Her shock and gasps of fear caused her husband beside her to slam on the brakes and ask her what was wrong. She did not need to answer, as everyone within the car realized that there was something moving out of the shadows on the grounds outside of the building. Everyone in the car was hypnotized by the creature's gaze. Something in those red eyes prevented any of them from having the ability to look away. The creature then turned and began to clumsily make its way out from the open door of the building of the plant on what was described as a pair of sturdy, man-like legs. A pair of large, 10-foot-long wings seemed to balance the creature. Otherwise, its balance seemed to be off as it attempted to cross the grounds between the building and the car. Its approach towards the foursome was enough to break Roger's trance. He slammed his foot down on the accelerator and turned the wheel hard to enable the car to U-turn on the dirt road. Gravel was sent flying, and their car was speeding through the open gates. Roger focused on the dark highway ahead of him, but the others could still see the creature now standing on a small hill adjacent to the hill. Mary Millette finally overcame the terror of the events and had to stifle a scream as she watched the winged monstrosity launch itself into the night. It flew straight upwards, much like a helicopter, but without flapping its leathery wings. Roger's Chevy was reaching speeds near 100 miles per hour as he reached Route 62. He believed he had pulled ahead of the flying creature and that they were safe. However, Linda turned away from her window and screamed at Roger that, quote, "My God, it's following us." The bird was easily keeping up with the racing car. Roger may have come out to the TNT area to drag race, but it was not part of his plan to have to outrace a creature that wasn't even flapping its wings, just coasting. The 7-foot-tall bird-like man was able to keep up with the speeding automobile without any effort. The only real energy it seemed to be spending was when it let out an unnerving shriek that Mary compared to the sound of a mouse, an amplified mouse squeak.
Damn.
Just when the car's occupants were almost ready to give in to the panic, Roger's Chevy finally passed the city limits of Point Pleasant. The creature took this as a sign to turn off and vanish back into the night.
Oh, so he doesn't leave Point Pleasant.
Well, he's never actually in the Point Pleasant during this story.
Oh, so he didn't enter the Point Pleasant.
No.
Oh, okay.
He pretty much lives in the TNT area and does travel back and forth between town and his home, wherever it is in the TNT area.
Oh, okay.
The four youths didn't stop there, but drove directly to the Mason County Courthouse, which housed the sheriff's office deputy. Chapter 3, The TNT Fuse is Lit. On duty that night was Deputy Millard Halstead. As the two couples surged into the office, each was talking over the other in a frantic effort to explain the occurrences of what they had just seen.
Yeah, could you imagine?
Exactly. I've seen it a lot in horror movies. You know, the people see something scary, they run to the police station, everyone's trying to tell their version of the story, and the poor deputy's just there going, what the hell?
Yeah.
Now, Halstead would later vouch for the teenagers by saying, quote, "I've known these kids all of their lives. They've never been in any trouble, and they were really scared that night. I took them seriously." Now, the deputy went with Roger back to the TNT area. There was no sign of the red-eyed monstrosity in the wildlife area. Halstead attempted to use his police radio, but only heard a mix of multiple shrieks, much like a tape-recorded voice being played at exceedingly high speed. It sounded like weird screeching. Sheriff George Johnson was informed of the events with the bird-like creature and Roger's car the following morning. And for some unknown reason, he decided to call a press conference.
Obviously, these kids were pretty damn believable.
Exactly. Or he wanted to squash any rumors immediately.
Ah.
Now, this did give the reporters the chance to question both the Scarberries and the Millettes regarding their harrowing encounter. To their credit, the four youths spent the entire morning answering all of the questions concerning the previous night. All four agreed that the monster was nearly 7 foot in height, dull gray in color, winged, with no apparent arms and a muscular pair of man-like legs. The reporter for the Athens Messenger, Mary Hare, who we will delve in more deeply in the next episode of The Mothman, She took their information and sent it out on the AP wire, where the story was soon appearing in newspapers across the globe in no time. It was like it sparked the imagination of the public. Within hours, the creature was the talk of the town. And within days, the story would continue to grow until it became an obsession for the entire world. At first, it was being called a bird. But because of an unknown copy editor, the creature was renamed the Mothman.
Nice.
It's a weird story because this was during the time of Adam West's Batman television show. This was had nothing to do with any of the descriptions of the Mothman creature resembling a moth, but more because the current trend of creating trendy names for villains. So you had Batman and all of his villains, so Mothman kind of fit into the current trend or the fad of villains.
Ah.
So he became Mothman, even though he was more bird-like in appearance. Later that evening, after Sheriff Johnson's press conference, there would be crowds of heavily armed West Virginians swarming the TNT area.
I'm going to take care of this myself.
Exactly the mentality that was going on at that time. Many were attempting to catch sight of the big bird-like creature that had so alarmed many of their own residents. Before long, the entire forested area of the TNT zone became overrun with honking cars parked, gung-ho hunters with shotguns, and a media circus. No bird was safe that night. Overly eager monster hunters would shoot at anything that flew by.
Rude.
Unfortunately, they were all looking in the wrong place. Chapter 4, Up Close and Personal. It was getting late, almost 9 p.m., at just beyond the commotion occurring was a small house. Raymond Wamsley, 19 years old, was driving through the TNT area with his wife Kathy and his older sister Marcella. Also, Marcella's 3-year-old daughter Tina was in the car with them. They weren't out that night participating in the festivities, or they had no interest in seeing the Mothman creature. Instead, they were en route to visit the home of Raymond and Marcella's sister, Virginia Thompson. It just happened that Virginia's isolated cottage was located at the back end of the TNT area. Their home was in the area because Virginia's husband, Ralph, was the president to an organization involved in overseeing the management of the McClintock Wildlife Area. So it was a perk of the job that they got to have this house in the wooded area.
Perk.
Well, they thought so at the time. This was before the discovery of the toxic waste being spilled in the environment around them. So they didn't know that their backyard was pretty much...
cesspool.
Now, when Raymond and the family arrived, the three Thompson children informed their aunts and uncle that their parents weren't home. Raymond was frustrated, but the three adults and a carried toddler turned from the home and began walking back to their car. There, they were startled by a sudden gunshot from out in the darkness of the woods. It was a reminder that it was not safe to be in the TNT area with all of the trigger-happy monster hunters and the drinking going on. Marcella was attempting to open her car door to place the sleepy Tina inside as she reached with one hand towards the door handle. A dark shadow eclipsed the light from the nearby house. It seemed to swallow the car in its darkness. And as Marcella turned to the rear of the car to determine the cause, there stood the dark mass of the Mothman. Marcella reported that it seemed as if the creature had been laying down on the ground and chose this moment to rise slowly from the ground. As it came into view, she saw that it was larger than a man and grayish in color. Staring at her were glowing red eyes. They were not merely reflecting light, but seem to have a source of radiance themselves. It was shaped like a male with huge wings unmoving along its back. It stood before the frightened mother as though it was completely without fear and had been waiting for just that moment for Marcella to walk up into its grasp. Ray was on the other side of the car from Marcella and the Mothman. He immediately grabbed his wife's arm before pulling her away from the car. He ran around the front of the car to return to the Thompson's house. Marcella was left alone, still cradling Tina in her arms. She swung around from the staring creature to follow her brother and sister-in-law back to the home. It was at that moment, when Marcella took her first step away from the creature, that she felt her legs crumple beneath her. She was falling face first to the ground and unable to stop herself. Little Tina, who was in her arms, was now beneath her and trapped under and literally smothering to death.
Oh no.
Marcella was unable to move. She could feel her child fighting to get free to breathe, but the mother couldn't move any part of her body. She was paralyzed by some power or the terror from the Mothman. As the mother remained in some form of a trance, she heard the whoosh of the creature launching itself into the night sky. It was then that she felt her brother's arms lift her off of her nearly asphyxiated child. Marcella and Tina were dragged to the front door. After pounding on the front door, the Thompson children, frightened by the commotion, let them into the home. The frightened family closed the door and heard a heavy shuffling sound of footsteps on the front porch. Then they saw a pair of malicious red orbs staring into the front window. They called the police, but by the time they reached the house, the Mothman had flown off, leaving a yard full of police officers searching with flashlights. Less than a mile away, there were hundreds of people, most of them armed with hunting rifles, that were completely oblivious to the incident until they read about it in the newspaper the next day. So it's kind of amusing that you had all of these people out there hunting, looking for the creature, and they totally missed it. Everything was happening just behind them.
Right. Which is kind of a good thing, or they would have been shooting everywhere.
And probably hitting people more than the creature.
Absolutely.
This would not be the end of the sightings of the Mothman, as hundreds of appearances would follow over the next 13 months. One such incident, a local contractor named Newell Partridge claimed to have seen the creature in a meadow close to his home. He shined a light at it, later mentioning its eyes glowed like red bike reflectors. Partridge's German Shepherd ran after the creature and never returned.
Oh, what the hell? Leave that part out. no animals were hurt in this.
Oh, I'm afraid they were. Another local resident named Connie Carpenter claimed to have been driving home from church when she saw something fly straight towards her vehicle, nearly causing her to crash. She said its eyes were as red as the devil. All of these sightings would lead up to the greatest tragedy to ever affect the small town of Point Pleasant. Chapter 5, The Silver Bridge Collapse. Situated on the Ohio River, Point Pleasant is connected to Gallipolis, Ohio via the Silver Bridge, which is named because of its aluminum paint. The bridge was built in 1928, and locals would cross it daily, sometimes several times each day. On December 15th, 1967, at 5:05 p.m., the bridge was full of cars. It was rush hour, and many of them were Christmas shoppers making their way home. Suddenly, the bridge began to shake. Everyone could hear a low moaning of metal and then a loud screech.
It's terrifying.
especially if you were in the middle of it. The bridge collapsed into the icy water below. Before it was over, 46 people died, 9 were injured, and 2 of the victims were never found. This became the worst bridge accident in American history at the time. For days, rescue workers pulled smashed cars and bodies from the river. Debris and Christmas presents floated down the river. The tragedy happened on the coldest day of the year. The Department of Transportation conducted a detailed investigation of the collapse. In their report, they found that the cause was a small 0.1 inch deep defect on the 13th steel pin eye bar. They said that it was improperly manufactured, and this small defect, this small crack, led to the collapse of the entire bridge. The Silver Bridge was also nearly 40 years old, poorly maintained, and for many years had been carrying more traffic than it was designed for. And during the time of December, with all the Christmas shoppers, it was carrying even more than normal daily traffic. However, our story has a few last twists. After the collapse of the bridge, people started coming forward, claiming that they saw the Mothman on the bridge before the incident. Rumors eventually spread at first that it was the Mothman that had damaged the piece on the bridge to the point that he caused the collapse. However, after the investigation cleared the Mothman, rumors then started to swirl that perhaps the Mothman, in some way, was a warning or a dark premonition to the disaster. Regardless of what his role was in the bridge collapse, the Mothman sightings suddenly stopped. With the town busy grieving and mourning their loved ones, attention towards the Mothman stopped. He simply vanished, and there were no more sightings of the winged creature. So the story started on one day, and then another day, everything just stopped.
So, I mean, from my viewpoint of that, it's that people were too busy thinking about it, too busy, too sad, too mournful. So did it really stop?
Yeah, it was all fun and games to joke about the Mothman or to tell ghost stories to each other. You know, if you saw something in the shadows, it automatically became the Mothman. But when a real tragedy, the collapse of the Silver Bridge, happened, kind of changes your opinion of continuing boogeyman stories.
Right.
So there's a possibility that, yeah, the Mothman was real and was involved in the Silver Bridge. Or the Silver Bridge was just a reminder to the people of what the tragedy of real life is like. But even though the sightings of the Mothman in Point Pleasant ended, his effect on popular culture continued. The town now holds the Mothman Festival, an annual event held every third weekend in September. It commemorates the 1966 Point Pleasant Mothman sightings, which gave birth to the infamous Red-Eyed Wing legend. The event sponsors guest speakers such as eyewitnesses and paranormal professionals from around the world. These speakers don't just include Mothman, but also Bigfoot and UFOs. The festival also has live bands, vendors, and there are even bus tours into the TNT area to view the grounds and the ammunition bunkers where the stories began. The town also has a curious rendition of the Mothman statue in town, which attracts tourists to get a selfie with the creature or its butt.
Or its butt?
Yeah, for some reason, and you'll have to look at the images of the Mothman statue, but they didn't just make a curved area resembling the butt. He actually has a pretty accurate
glutimus maximus.
Yeah. And it's become a running joke of people going to visit not just the Mothman, but the Mothman's butt.
So what you're saying is Captain America is not America's butt, Mothman is?
No, Captain America is America's ass, and right. Mothman is Point Pleasant's and West Virginia's ass.
Okay.
The town also has a Mothman Museum, which is open to see not only artifacts from the time of the Mothman sightings, but it also has many movie props from the Mothman Prophecy movie. Since I mentioned it, the premier movie for a movie night about the Mothman has to include the Mothman Prophecies. This movie, starring Richard Gere, was based on the 1975 book of the same name. It follows a reporter, who is supposed to be John Keel, as he becomes involved in the supernatural and possible alien connections to the Mothman. The movie deals with more of the alien connections than the creature, so I plan on touching more on this book and John Keel and the UFOs during part 2 episode of Mothman, The Alien. But it's still a great movie to see in the meantime. This is also not the only movie with a Mothman theme. There is also a 2017 Mothman of Point Pleasant. This is a historical documentary that covers the town and the entire 13-month period when the Mothman sightings were in full effect. So if you want to get a historical movie, this would be my recommendation. But I can't ignore the horror fans out there, so don't worry about accuracy when you watch The Mothman Curse of 2015. This is kind of one of those security camera, paranormal activity type feels to it, but it is about two women who work in a large empty museum, and as they work the late nights, one of them starts to notice a menacing dark shadows watching them, and it isn't long before one of the women's personalities is starting to change for the worse as they are both thrown into a living nightmare.
So that those are kind of horror fiction. But the one you talked about before that, The Mothman of Point Pleasant, that's more of a documentary?
Yes. The Mothman of Point Pleasant is a documentary. Whereas The Mothman Prophecies is based off of the research of John Keel. And then this last one is the totally made-up fictional horror movie involving the Mothman called The Mothman Curse.
Okay.
But movies aren't the only way you can find stories about the Mothman. Because for our listeners who want to curl up with a great book about the Mothman, I would recommend Mothman, Return to Point Pleasant by Scott Donnelly. We actually did an interview with Scott Donnelly as this book was coming out, and we got to read the book, and it is amazing. He wrote it earlier this year, and it's a fictional work about the winged terror of West Virginia. The plot is that after 50 years since the sightings of the Mothman, character Billy Slater and his mom move to the small town. Of course, he picks just at this time that the town of Point Pleasant is beset by shrieks in the night, glowing red eyes peering out of the darkness, and the town is under siege by the winged creature once more. This time, however, things are different. As Scott Donnelly writes, evolution is inevitable.
It's a really good book, too.
And it's a lot scarier than the original sightings of the Mothman were.
Oh, yeah.
So, do you have any final opinions?
No, I mean, these are... I haven't, you know, didn't hear about the ones that you mentioned before that. But Mothman's always been, you know, just scary. I mean, what exactly is he? I mean, shit.
And that's what we're going to kind of touch over on each of these episodes. This one was kind of to try and give some of the sightings of the creature as a monster, as a cryptid. And the next one we're going to talk to about all the connections with UFOs and the possibilities that he is an alien from another world.
Wow, yeah.
Then our third one we'll touch on whether or not he's a supernatural creature, a real harbinger of doom.
That's where I'm at with that third one.
Okay, well then you're going to really like the third episode we're going to have.
Awesome.
Now the whole concept of the Mothman is just too large for one episode, and this is just one aspect of the story. Someone acclaimed that it's a sandhill crane, an owl, a hoax. But with so many eyewitnesses, it's hard to believe that they would all misidentify a bird for this 7-foot-tall creature.
I really hate the sandhill crane idea because I love sandhill cranes so much.
I know, and if you look at a picture of a sandhill crane, there is no way that that skinny, long-necked bird, even though it has red circles around its eyes,
absolutely not
qualify as a Mothman.
And they don't sound like a mouse either.
No. Well, being sure to watch the darkness for crimson glowing orbs and a winged creature of the night, I suppose this is a good time to make our way back out of the mist and bring this episode to a close. Special thanks to David Facilian and Facilian Studios for our introduction music. We would like you to please leave us a review on the podcast provider you are listening to this on to help promote our show. We are on social media and would love to hear your stories and opinions about encounters with the Mothman or other winged creatures of your own. You can reach us on our Facebook page, Within the Mist Podcast, and we are also on Instagram and Twitter. We even have an email address, so you could write us at withinthemistpodcast@gmail.com for any of you who would like to share. We love stories and hearing about your own personal experiences. For those of you that may need a daily dose of cryptids and ghosts, we have a TikTok channel which gives a few minute clips about a story involving some of your favorites and some unknown creatures and spirits. We hope you enjoyed our stories about the Mothman, and we'll come again for another episode.
Well, I hope they do. They want the rest of the story.
I know, you gotta get them back for part 2 and part 3.
Yeah.
But until then, remain constantly curious. Goodbye, everyone.
See you soon.